Accession number 20593, Reel 3.
Roland Nappin, Reel 3.
I think
there's something you want to correct, isn't
it? Reading from memory, I would like to correct that where we were pinned down was not on the Chinwin, it was after the Irrawaddy River crossing. We went in, and that was where we were pinned for a bit.
What's reminded us of this is that you've just shown me a letter from
Sergeant,
an old comrade of yours who unfortunately died last year, called Mr. Gannon.
That's right.
Who lived in Southport and who was with you with the Second Welsh. And he says it was the Irrawaddy crossing.
That's right, it was the Irrawaddy. But now, at our age, memories, you can remember the incident, but you can't always remember the exact positions.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, it's very seldom that a muleteer is called to go out on what I call a section patrol. But this happened to me once, that I had to go out as an ordinary infantryman. And it was scary to me, because when you're with the mules, you've got other people around you. But when you go out on a section patrol, you get into a position which I was put and told to take up, leading scout. Now, anybody that did lead or has done leading scout, it's not a very pleasant thing. You're ahead of the section and you're looking out for enemy or any movement of an enemy people, and you don't do that patrol leading scout for very long before somebody else comes up and takes that position up and do it for about 10 minutes, maybe a quarter of an hour, and then you get relieved and somebody else takes up the position. You get a number one leading scout, and then a number two, and then the main section, usually. I won't say it always happens, but this particular time, I was sent as leading scout, and every movement in the jungle that you spot, at this particular time, I halted the section when I was leading scout, and we came up against the village. And I called, it was a corporal, I can't remember his name. We came up and I said, there's movement in that village. And we ended up reporting it back. And I was given to understand there was quite a number of Japanese in the village. Now, it is important that a section do not take up that and go in, otherwise you'd be slaughtered and you couldn't get that information back to the battalion. So the main thing was to get the information back to headquarters, which they did. And from what happened then, I don't know. As far as I know of, they took the position. But it was these sort of things that went on. And certain little things comes to mind, what you can remember.
Such as?
Well, doing this leading scout business. It was one of the first times that I'd ever did it. And it is not pleasant, not to me. At any rate, I don't think it's pleasant to anybody to do a leading scout position, because you can get shot at. But 9 times out of 10, as I've been given to understand, it never happened to me, but the enemy would always let the leading scout go forward, or the second, so he could have a go at the main column. But it didn't happen. not while I was doing it, at any rate. But that was what I was given to understand. But I can't say that I ever was in that position. But the, as far as I know, we took 3 days and nights to climb, which I've been given to understand since must have been an opium trail. At least I didn't know it at the time, but it must have been that trail. And we climbed a hill that took us, I think, 3 days and nights to get up over. And this was a place called Mamio, which we took because the Japanese didn't, I don't think they realized that we could do it, climb that distance. We did, and we attacked. And we caught them unawares, and we captured 32, I think, memory's correct there, 32 Japanese vehicles. And that, as far as I can remember, that was cutting the road, as I was given to understand then, coming down from China to Mandalay.
What are your own memories of the capture of Mamio?
At first, we had to take cover, and I got an entrenching tool out to try and dig a hole, or tried to dig a slit trench, and the ground was that hard, I couldn't make much impression on it, so we just used what cover we had there. But Mamio, the people, the villagers and that, they more or less, to my way of thinking, welcomed us with open arms. Well, the main attack was going in at Mandalay, and I think I'm right in saying that the 2nd Battalion Royal Berks went in down there. We were up higher up, but that was with the 19th Indian Division. And that was what we used to call Doy Reese's Division. Little short man he was. Always wore a red neckerchief round his neck.
Did you ever see him?
Yes, I saw him once. Yes, he used to come. He was always up, you know, with the force. Yes. He wasn't very big. But he always wore this red neckerchief. Always. Personally, myself, I should have liked to have seen it. And that was Mandalay, but my battalion, we never did see it. And we went on down to a place called Tongu. And we went up another way to, I think you call it Siam, up the Mochi Road. And that was a road that went up, I think I'm right in saying it's called Malaya, or Siam, whatever you like to call it now. And we went up that road. You could only pass one way. If you had vehicles going up at a certain time, you'd let those that go up, we'll say 10 o'clock in the morning until 12 o'clock, and then you'd halt them at the bottom and let the others come down if they wanted to come down. It was one of those type of roads. This was after it was secured. But we had a group of chaps that were sent up the Mochi Road, and they got hit on the bend by the Japanese, and I thought the whole lot had been killed. That was my impression until a number of years ago now, I happen to be in the Burma Star now, and we had a dinner dance in Bournemouth, and a man came into our dinner dance, and we were talking, and his name was Ford. He was one of the men out of the 32 men that went up there, and I thought they were all killed. And he happened to be one, the only one I think it was, that came out. And he showed me his legs and where they stuck a bayonet and all that in his legs. And he was still alive, and I don't know where he is today, but it was only then, years after the war, that I found out that he was one that wasn't killed.
And he was in your battalion?
Yes, he was in the battalion. I didn't know it at the time, but it was only by talking that, as you do, that I mentioned it.
Had he been captured by Japanese?
No, he hadn't been captured. He'd been left for dead. But he wasn't. I thought he said that it was the, in the end, it found him was the Berks, the Royal Berks Regiment, I think. Well, that's to my memory what he told me. I think he said the Royal Berkshire Regiment found him. And his legs was cut about quite a lot, but he's still walking. He came to the dinner dance, and I was thankful that he'd come out of it, although he was wounded. But he still walked about. So those were the type of things. I didn't see that, but they got caught on an ambush up the Morty Road. We were back in, used to come back into Tongu for like a rest. And you go up again, and I did a night up on the Morty Road, and I should never forget that. There were little tiny flies, you call them. They were very miniature, and they nearly drove you crazy round your face, neck, and everything else. And you just had to grin and bear these sort of things in the jungle. We came back.
Was that the patrol?
No, this was, well, a section of us up there, up on the lead, you know, on the top end of the Morty Road.
You mean occupying the place?
Occupying the place, yeah. But I came back to Tongu. And where we were at Tongu, as far as my memory is correct, the order ceasefire came on the 15th of August.
How did you feel about that?
Grateful, because just before the ceasefire, we had some drink give us in Tongu while we were on this bit of a rest. We used to pull back for, I think my memory's correct and say it was like a 3-day rest. And you perhaps move out and go up again into a position. And I drank, which I didn't drink, and I still don't. But you were in a position there, you just had whatever it was to drink. And I was worse for wear, to be honest. When I went to groom my animal the next morning, I should remember the sergeant said to me, he said, when I was brushing him, and I went to brush underneath the animal's stomach, this is the funny side of it. When I went to brush underneath the animal's stomach and I bent over my head, it was just as if it was going to explode, but I'd had some drink the night before. And we were back out the line, you must remember. And he said, Nathan, go and sit down or lay down, he said, before you fall down. And this was done as a, you know, it was one of the little points that there. It wasn't a case of you were drunk. You've been up, you've been in the line so long, you didn't care in the end. I've got to go up again. Are you going to come back? This goes through your mind. So you make the best of whatever there is.
Did you ever get kicked by mules?
No, funny enough, I did not. No. We used to, we had a farrier and all that with us. We used to carry four shoes on the top of the saddle, which would be more.
No, don't get up.
On the top, there used to be a groove, and you used to carry four shoes there. Should an animal there, and the farrier was there, that they would reshoe or that. But no, you used to have to clean out their hoofs and that in the morning.
How do you do that?
Well, you had what they call a hoof pick, which was a like a piece of metal, but it was shaped like a hook. And you lifted the animal's foot and you raked out any muck that was in the bottom of the hoof and that. And some animals, I helped the veterinary man that was there on another occasion when the animal had been wounded. It had a bad wound on the side and it had to be dressed. And I can remember what you did. You wiped the wound out. It had maggots in it. You cleaned all the maggots out, more or less, and just left one or two, and then sealed it up. The maggots would keep the wound clean. You had to dress those continuously to make sure that the wound was healing over. But other than those sort of things, I can't remember too much, really.
Were the mules frightened of the fighting?
Not to my knowledge, you know, I mean to say, there had been positions where we had there, and we had our the mountain batteries used to open up, and people you get today turn around and say, I can't go to sleep because of an automatic drill, but I never had any trouble to dropping off to sleep when the guns opened up. Not personally. You were that tired at certain times. All the noise in the world didn't make a lot of difference to you.
But the mules weren't frightened of the fighting?
Not really, no. They just followed along, you know. We crossed rivers and... I don't think we could have done... Well, I know we couldn't have done without the animals. And we couldn't have done without the RAF dropping our supplies. That particular time that I told you about after crossing the, in which I rectified the, crossing the Irrawaddy and got pinned down, we lost a lot of men. And before we had an airdrop to us, which they could drop stuff to us. And the sergeant came across, and my mother used to send me 200 Craven A cigarettes every fortnight. Now, I hadn't received any for some time. Well, they got lost when the airdrops or something like this happened. Some airdrops were dropped in a position where we couldn't get at it. But this particular time, a sergeant came across to me and he said, you got two parcels. He said, they're cigarettes. Now, I knew that everybody was short in that there. And I said, look, I'll have the one. You distribute the other packet, I said, to the rest of the men there. And I remember that. And I don't think I had any other parcels after that. But my mother always used to send these because she had a general shop next door. And the firm that sent them every fortnight was Palmer and Arby's at Holdner's Road, Bournemouth. But Tongu was the place I was when war finished on the 15th of August.
Did you see any active service after that?
No, I did not. No. We finished up at the end of the war on the 23rd milestone, or 22nd, 23rd milestone, up the Mochi Road. We came back to Tongu, where I was then stationed with the battalion. And then I left the battalion. They wanted volunteers for the military police.
In Burma?
In Burma. This was in Tongu. I think my dates are right. The war finished on the 15th of August. They wanted volunteers, and I went and joined the military police on the 19th of August. I think those dates are correct, or thereabouts. And I did a quick course in Tongu on different things, traffic control and all this sort of thing, and a quick course. In fact, I had to go up and up the Mochi Road and say what the state of the road was in and report back. That came in the exam. This was just after the war, about a week or so after the war. After I passed that course in Tongu, I was made Lance Corporal, and within days they made me up full corporal and sent me out to a signal section. Now, I cannot remember what section it was. I hadn't been out all that long ago then, and I was recalled back to Tongu, still made full corporal within, it was quick time, and I was posted to Singapore, and I had to go down to Rangoon. And funny enough, they went down there by truck, and the Gurkhas drove us down by truck over to Singapore by boat, and I had to report to what they call the ELFC training school. And it was in Scott Road in Singapore, just off the Orchard Road, and reported there. It was supposed to be as an instructor. That was how quick things happened. And they wanted a ration corporal, so they appointed me as a ration corporal for this training school.
What were conditions like in Singapore?
Very good. One of the best stations I've ever served in. To me, it was the best. I've always said that I thought about going back, but they tell me now I wouldn't recognize it. And in fact, one of the lads that's in the Burma Star Association with me at this moment, he came there. And he went training, and he ended up as a military policeman. And that is Ken Butchers. And he lives at Creekmoor now. And he served with the SWBs.
Did you stay long in Singapore?
I was in Singapore from end part of 45 till 46. I can't remember the exact month I came back. Could have been September, about 46 or something like that. Could have been any. It was on the end of it, I know. Because I came back here in England, 1946, to a place called Ashvale, Midget Depot, Ashvale, if you remember. That was the military police headquarters at the time, I think I'm right.
Were you demobbed at Mitchell?
No, I was then asked, when do you want to go on leave? And I said, that's a silly question to ask me. I haven't been home for I don't know how many years. They gave me leave straight away, 28 days, which I came home after all that combat and that. I went back to Midget Depot, and Midget Depot sent me to Taunton, I think it was, Taunton. When I got there, there was a major, I can't remember his name, because I'd only just come back, and I was only there a matter of hours. And he called in the sergeant major down there. He said, where do we want a full corporal? And he said, Plymouth or Bristol? And that's the first time that I have been asked by an officer, seeing I served abroad, he said, where do you want to go? I said, Bristol, please, sir. I looked at the map behind us, and I was picking. I thought to myself, Plymouth, I'll go to Bristol. So I said, Bristol. And I got sent to Horfield Barracks in Bristol. And I used to be able to ride a motorbike then, which my father got ready for me. And I used to go backwards and forwards when I had a bit of leave or time, like a weekend or something like that. I used to ride the motorbike back up here and back down to Bristol. And I left there after some time, and I got posted to Bulford Camp, 160 Company CRMP. And I served most of my time there in Bulford Camp. And I used to do patrols to Salisbury. Once I got posted to Reading on a detachment for a short time, but ended up back in Bulford Camp again. And that was where I got demobbed, 1947, with Ken Butchers, because he was at Bulford as well with me. We went to Woking, to the demob centre.
How do you feel now about having served in Burma in the Second World War?
Now, my own personal opinion is I'm glad I've done it. It's an experience I don't think people realise, but I never wish anybody to ever have to go through any of that experience ever again.